What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I am Tom Hush, and usually this is where you would hear my fantastic co-host, Mr. Connor Cornelius, but today he is unfortunately out. He's not going to be able to join us, but that's okay. Everybody needs a break every once in a while when you're covering cinema every single week. But we do have a fantastic guest today. We're going to be talking to Eric Childress. He is a film critic for efilmcritic.com and also the executive secretary of the board for the Chicago Film Critics Association. Today we're going to be talking about the Chicago Critics Film Festival happening at the Music Box. That's this Friday. You're listening to this on Monday. You'll be able to get there on Friday, May 4th. Runs the whole week until May 10th. Lots of fantastic screenings. So, Eric, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, tell us a little bit about getting involved with the Chicago Film Critics Association. We know it was founded in 1990, been running strong ever since. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you do for them as the executive secretary and also just in general.
Well, I first got involved with the Chicago Film Critics Association. I had been doing some radio shows here in Chicago as a kind of a de facto movie critic for them, including with Nick DiGilio right here at WGN Radio. And it kind of introduced me to a website you mentioned, efilmcritic.com, and I ended up doing movie reviews for them. And that was sort of my gateway into having a professional outlet that allowed me to apply for the Chicago Film Critics Association. I was in touch with Dan Geyer, who is the current president then, president now, and eventually I was the first online critic to be accepted into the organization. There was a time when, you know, believe it or not so long ago, that online film critics were kind of like the stepchild of the film criticism world. And so a lot of organizations didn't have bylaws or rules to, you know, have online film critics in. So I was the first one accepted into the group at the time. That was 2001.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, online film criticism, I feel like it's as old as the internet itself.
We're about 17, probably more like 20 years, the evolvement of online film criticism as a kind of a, like, oh, who are these guys who can just write a blog and, you know, do some movie criticism, to an actual, now it's almost all shifted. I mean, even all the newspapers and whatnot have had to keep up with the internet. So a lot of mm-hmm. newspapers and magazines and whatnot have to get the opportunity to post their stuff earlier than they normally would on a Friday and have their stuff out there.
So being one of those, being the first online film critic to be allowed into this Critics Association, was there a sort of, I don't know, trepidation about having an online critic, or were people just kind of seeing that what you were doing was more or less going to be the future of film criticism?
I don't think anyone was looking towards the future at mm-hmm. all. I think that they saw that what I was doing, that there was value to it, that I was, I had opinions and I had a sense for critical thought about film, and my writing, which is much better now than it was back then, was still deemed more than acceptable to be, you know, amongst the ranks. I think it was just a moment of the decision rather than some sort of outlook towards the future.
Right.
But obviously, that, you know, has evolved as well.
True. And the association has some of the most well-known and recognizable names in Chicago film criticism. Mm-hmm. I know A.A. Dowd from the AV Club, Richard Roper as mm-hmm. well. Tell us a little bit about that selection process. I know it's it can, you know, you have to be recognized in certain yeah. ways. You have to be in print, or, you know, be recognized by some sort of publishing body mm-hmm. to actually get in. Tell us about the process.
Well, there are numbers. I mean, again, another thing that's kind of evolved over the years, and I mean, basically, you know, to sort of keep it short and sweet, you have to be a good writer. You have to have critical thought about film. You don't want to be just posting synopses and, you know, puff pieces and things mm-hmm. like that. You have to have some sort of measured thought about the world of cinema, and have an outlet that provide you an opportunity to show your stuff regularly. So, and also just a maintaining that regularity, not just posting one thing every couple of months to sort of stay within the group, but to have a consistent voice out there in the world. And if you maintain all of those things, then we take invitations or applications every year. Obviously, we're about to be doing that this summer again for the next upcoming year. But we try to encourage people, even if they don't get in the first time, to keep working on your writing, and someday. Because I didn't get in the first time either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
When it comes to Chicago film criticism. I would say that the city has quite a reputation. Obviously, we have names like Roger Ebert, obviously, off the top of the head. And I think that Chicago has a very specific place in the Chicago, in the critic world, not just for film, but all around. We've got a lot of legendary critics. What is it about the Chicago critics community here that seems so fertile for writing?
Well, I think it's the kind of lack of influence from the actual the Hollywood community itself. I mean, I think if you look at not to, you know, in any way separate LA and New York film critics, but, you know, there are a lot of film critics in LA who are very close to the industry, and there's a lot of perks and things involved in that. They get earlier access to many of us here in the Chicago, which sometimes can feel like a flyover city as far as the Hollywood community is concerned. And I think that allows us a little less opportunity to be influenced, you know, that we have, you know, kind of a separation from that world that allows us to be a little bit more independent in our thinking. So we're not as committed to pleasing studios or, you know, pleasing, you know, just to sort of keep our names amongst the ranks. You know, we have a reputation of being honest, I think. And not that, you know, again, I'm not suggesting at all that LA and New York are dishonest in any way.
No.
But there is, you know, those two markets are treated a little bit differently than we are here in Chicago, even though we are the third largest market in the country.
Absolutely. And there seems to be, do you feel that there's a Chicago style? You mentioned honesty. I know that I read critics from around the country. There's many that I enjoy, but there's always something about reading a Chicago critic where I feel like I'm getting the cut and dry opinion. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's just a virtue of living in the city of Chicago, as you mentioned, lack of influence? But is there a style of Chicago writing?
I don't know if there's necessarily a style in the way that people think that, you know, there's a Chicago accent or
right.
anything like that. I think that, you know, because we are the city of Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, that you know, who's an influence everywhere, obviously not just in Chicago, but I think the critics here in Chicago feel obviously a very special kinship to both of them who were members of the Chicago Film Critics Association. And, you know, I think that even in the back of even the best critic's mind, I think that there's an influence there that we want to be in some way carry on the legacy that people like Roger Ebert have had in this city, that have expanded the world of film criticism beyond just more the, you know, the thumbs up or the thumbs down thing that people latched onto as part of their show, but the way that they would have these discussions about film. And I think it's very important to have not just a writing style, but a way of articulating things, you know, verbally and doing shows like this that I think are very important. So I don't know if there's necessarily a style, but there's certainly an influence.
Right. And especially with both Ebert and Siskel, they were very much scholars of film in a certain way. Ebert having his multi-volume, you know, great movies, and he always expanded upon it. Obviously, we, you know, Chicago and those two being famous for coining the whole thumbs up, thumbs down thing, but that's really just what brought you in to the much deeper conversation that was going on. I was curious to get your opinion on where you feel film criticism is at now, because we do have a much more democratized media landscape. People can literally just upload their opinions on any movie, you know, they want on YouTube or on WordPress, any number of sites. Do you find this to be a boon for creative critical writing, or is it a little bit of a problem when it comes to a deluge of opinions?
Well, I think what the internet has done is, in the positive, has opened the doors for people to better themselves, better their craft. Because you go back, I think any critic will say, go back and look at the early stuff that they wrote, whether professionally or just as a, you know, as a hobby, and I'll say, please don't look at that stuff, because we've all kind of evolved in our writing and our thought process as we've gotten older and wiser and more, and, you know, we read more and we attune to other, you know, the way that other people express themselves. So I think that as a positive, it works for people to get to practice, basically, that, you know, to sort of, you know, get a better appreciation of what it means to be a critic, as opposed to just being a just another publicist, if you will, for the studio system. You don't, you know, just because you get to see something early and then you write something glorious or hyperbolic about a movie doesn't necessarily mean you're a film critic. You just might be selling something. And, you know, I used to do a thing called Critic Watch, where I would compile the blurbs that you would see on all these ads. And there are a lot of people that don't write reviews, but they blurt out the blurbs.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, there are sometimes I look at a movie poster, I'm just like, did really someone say this about Skyscraper
Rampage? It's not as bad as it used to be. It's actually, I'd like to think that maybe I helped with that a little bit, but I don't do that anymore. I think it's very, you have to be careful on the internet. A site like Rotten Tomatoes that, full disclosure, I actually do a box office column for that I just started recently. You have to wade through and find critics that either inspire you with their thought process, or even if it's just someone you agree with a lot of the time, and find someone and latch on to them and find someone who you don't agree with and sort of get another perspective on something. As long as someone's not being overtly nasty or snarky for the sake of snark, I know that's a market in and of itself as
absolutely.
Well. So, I think that there are a lot of positives to, everyone being a critic now, literally, having the everyone's a critic moniker, and I think we're at that point now. I think with everything else out there in every industry, just, be careful. Look for the ones who are on the up and up.
And speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, that's something that we've talked about on the show before. Obviously, I have my issues with not so much Rotten Tomatoes, but the way that people want to use Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
And even something like Metacritic as well, these kind of review aggregators that give you a number, because people love numbers.
I love numbers, too.
Everybody likes a nice thumbs up, thumbs down, what have you. Mm-hmm. But I like what you're saying about pick the critics that you can agree with or maybe not agree with. I know, honestly, one of my favorite critics to read, as much as I vehemently disagree with him on certain things, is Armand White from the National Review.
Really?
I have read almost every piece he's ever done on I'm really fascinated by his obsession with Zack Snyder and Batman versus Superman. And I walked away from it being like, I don't agree with this, but I'll be damned if this isn't the most beautiful writing about this movie that anybody has ever done.
Which, is another market. You can find people who are very good at writing, but you don't necessarily think that their opinion are coming from, even Roger Ebert called Armand White a troll many years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, I think that there are very good writers that certainly that I disagree with a lot, but I think that they're coming from a real honest place, not trying to be controversial. You look at Rotten Tomatoes and, you see those, sometimes you get Get Out or something, or Paddington 2, that are at the 100% for a while. And then there's that one guy that is going to write the bad review or the semi-negative review that's going to, knock it down to 99 or 98%. Yeah. And then everyone jumps on that guy you're just doing that for, so there's a stigma about honesty and, more so in the last couple of years, obviously, of where we are in society, that we're more skeptical than ever. And Rotten Tomatoes, I think, is the same way that you use two thumbs up. It's a guide post. Mm-hmm. Okay, two thumbs up for Backdraft doesn't mean the same as two thumbs up for Fargo.
Right.
So it's just, it might be the same thing on the ad, but go and read what they say. Go watch the clips of Siskel and Ebert and see what they say about those movies. You know, 98% could be full of 3-star reviews, while an 80% movie could be full of 4-star. Review. So it just, keep an eye, watch the numbers. Don't just stop at the first number or the first thumb that you see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, be an informed film viewer. And I think that the Chicago Film Critics Association, having all these critics get together, I think that's a great way to do it. Tell me a little bit about some of the benefits of, critics. Maybe there's someone listening out there, they're getting started in their own career. What are some of the benefits of being part of this association?
Well, there's a community, certainly. Being a part and being recognized as a professional can get you more opportunities in the city, invitations, sometimes interviews. People who do come into the city to do interviews, can get opportunities like that. Obviously, we have awards at the end of the year, so sometimes they want to send us little reminders in the mail, which is a nice kind of thing around that time. It's the community that I think is really important, and leading into the festival and getting people together to experience all these movies at one time, I think is a real benefit to being a member.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into the festival itself, I do want to ask, what is the Chicago film critic community like? How do you guys interact? Tell us about you know, how you might collaborate or how you read each other. I know writers love to read each other's work and maybe glean a little from each other, learn a little bit, and maybe even do some helpful critiques. What's that like for you?
Well, I think one thing that I've noticed probably that there's kind of a lack of, for lack of a better term, competition, that we're not trying to sort of one-up each other, that we all support each other's works and things like that, whether it be an individual review or, you know, a follow Friday on Twitter or anything like that, that there's a support mechanism in place. And we might not get to see each other all the time. You know, we see a lot of each other at screenings, early screenings and things like that, that are always fun to interact with. Many of us are very good friends. You know, obviously we work on the festival and stuff. So I mean, it's a community that, you know, I mean, you go to film festivals and you see a lot of people from all across the country that you get to meet, and some of them you're friendly with, some of them you just kind of ignore just because that's the way it is. But in Chicago, there is, I mean, it's almost like a Cheers kind of thing. Everyone does kind of know your name in the city. And I think that's one of the another benefit of being a part of this organization, that you really feel that there is a community out there that's kind of, you know, got your back if you need it.
Absolutely. And we've seen in our here at No Coast, we've seen not just in the filmmaking community, but also the film critique community, that Chicago is a very special place for that sort of thing. And it does differentiate itself a lot from, as you said, LA and New York communities. And just it's its own thing, and it's really great to experience. And people really should start to engage a little bit more with it, because we have things such as the Chicago Critics Film Festival in its sixth year. So congratulations on
thank
that
you.
Has been a long 6 years.
I think, you know, you get older, everything just kind of bleeds together, and you can't believe that 1 month is gone, 1 week is gone, kind of thing. It's just you get busier and it just becomes a part of the landscape. But you know, I was on Facebook this morning, and I just happened to see a memory pop up, and it happened to be the very first day night of the Chicago Critics Film Festival. The picture of me and Sarah Polly and Steve Procopi, who's part of the programming team, the very first night of, and it was 5 years ago, 2013 in April.
So, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a jam-packed festival going from May 4th to the 10th. There's almost a full week there, and you've got, it's chock full of screenings, special appearances as well, and we'll talk about those. But tell me a little bit about the planning that goes into something like a film festival, because it seems like from the outside, it's hard to kind of form in your head. What do you do? Just call up a bunch of people? Hey, we're going to show a bunch of movies at the Music Box. We rented it out. There's going to be a bar. Like, let's do this.
That sounds a lot like the first year. The first year planning that, you know, if you want to talk about, we can. But the very first year, it really was spit and polish, race against the clock. Are we, you know, even while we were doing it, like, are we really doing this kind of thing? The way it all came together. We put together the first, and it was only a weekend the first year. It was in the suburbs. It was sort of a test run. We still couldn't believe we were even doing it. But 3 months together, we put together this weekend festival. And that's kind of what it was. It was like I'll go into our selection process, but we were looking for films that we liked, that we wanted to show and show off and promote at this festival. And you just call up publicists, call up filmmakers, and go like, hey, we'd like to invite you to our festival. And the first year, we were shocked how many people said yes. And there were certainly a number of no's, new festival, who the heck are you,
right,
kind of thing. But there were a number of people, you know, even industry people, who were like, wow, this is a cool idea. We'd like to be a part of this. So now flash forward to now. You know, basically, our festival is different than, say, Sundance or Cannes or Toronto and stuff, where we're not picking films, you know, submissions, basically. We do get those as well, but our selection process mainly comes from other festivals. We wanted to create a film festival in the city for people who can't get out to Sundance in Toronto, do something for them while at the same time creating a collection of films that we really want to see get more exposure. Movies that we really like in some form or another, in many different genres, that we just wanted, you know, not to get dismissed, not to get to end up just on video on demand without the opportunity to be in a theater, or, you know, something that might not even play in Chicago once it leaves Sundance or South by Southwest or something like that. We've had many of those over the years. So usually, you know, Toronto kind of starts the selection process in September, and there are a lot of films in Toronto that end up opening before we get to our festival in May. But we do end up getting a couple things from them. Then it's Sundance is when it really kind of kicks into high gear, that we really start seeing things that are going to be opening in the summer, maybe in the fall, that we really want to, you know, sort of be the bridge to their opening. That, you know, whether it be we're a couple weeks early or a few months, or in some cases, even a full year we've had before a film has even come back to Chicago. That's the kind of thing that, you know, we're sending invites, you know, left and right, like, hey, we really like your film. We want to show it as part of this showcase of some of the best films available on the film festival circuit like now, and hope you'll attend.
When it comes to that selection process, is it the board? Is there sort of a committee? How do people get that those films chosen?
We have a programming team. When I first had the idea for the festival, and I started kind of piecing things together and find out where we're going to get the money from, and you know what films might be available to show at the festival, I brought in close friends and colleagues of mine in the organization that I knew were interested in being a part of it, that were really eager to be a part of it. I wanted people close to me that I knew had the same passion and believed in the idea that that we were working on. So we have a programming team. We expanded a little bit this year, and it's simple. It's like, a bunch of us go to film festivals, and we have other people in the organization that go to film festivals as well. So we take their input. We go like, hey, what did you see at the film at Sundance? What did you like? And they let us know. Like, this would be really good. This would be really good. And they're like, oh, okay. And then so we look at it, and then if a couple of us like it, we invite it. It's really that simple. If we like the movie, you're invited.
Wow.
You know? And it's just, you know, we don't have sort of a 1 to 50 list. We don't rank the film so much. It's just like, oh, that's a movie we really like. Oh, Sundance is over. Here's your invitation. We'd like you to be a part of our festival.
Yeah, it's kind of that theory of abundance, you know, put out a lot of lines, and, you know, and as you can see from the program for this year, a lot of great films are saying yes. I was honestly floored when I got the chance to see the programming schedule here. I want to get into a few of them that I'm really excited about. First of all, opening night, a film called Fast Color. It's directed by Julia Hart, and it is starring Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who was most recently in Wrinkle in Time. Mm-hmm. She did appear in the Cloverfield Paradox on Netflix. Mm-hmm. But one of the films I saw her in that I really enjoyed was Belle.
Yeah.
And I think she's a really great a rising star, really, even though she's been around for a little while. And this is also produced by Jordan Horowitz, who worked on La La Land, correct?
Producer of La La Land,
which was a movie that, albeit controversial, I couldn't help but, you know, fawn over a little bit.
Fake controversy. It was just, you know, it's Oscar controversy, where something is really liked for a while, and then when the awards come out and they go like, no, I like this other movie better, so this movie must be garbage. The Birdman Boyhood thing. It's
right.
Like, people really like Birdman, and then they're like, no, it's not as good as this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, you just liked this movie 3 months ago. How can it be garbage now?
Yeah.
And that happens. That's a whole other conversation. But that's
absolutely.
Thing that happens with awards every year, is that one movie is really liked, and La La Land made a lot of people happy. A lot of people saw that movie, but they, you know, some people like Moonlight, some people like something else, and so, like, no, we got to tear this movie down, otherwise it's going to win everything. Like, why? Like, you liked it 2 months ago. Like,
and, I mean, from a production standpoint, I'm sure that Mr. Horowitz was working double time to make that happen.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about Fast Color.
Well, Fast Color, it premiered at South by Southwest this year. And Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays a woman who is on the run at the beginning of the movie. The Earth is kind of in a, shall we say, a climate stasis, if you will. Things are not looking good for the environment. She's on the run from people in the government because she has some interesting powers. The ads or the synopsis of the movie kind of describes her as a superhero. You can judge how, you know, if that term is worthy. I don't want people going in this movie thinking X-Men kind of thing, but there are X-Men-like abilities in it. But it's a movie about family. It's a movie about family. It's a movie about the Earth. And her, in the course of running away from the people who want to capture her and use her for whatever, she reunites with her family that she abandoned several years ago, including her mom and her young daughter. So it becomes this family reunion kind of thing while also trying to keep her hidden. And it's an interesting film that I think people who take a chance on an opening night, and I say take a chance because people might not be aware of, mm-hmm. of these movies. So we want people to come, and I think by the end of it, they're really going to be rewarded by the end of this movie. They're really going to kind of have an emotional boost by the end of this film.
Was there a particular reason that you wanted to open up with Fast Color on the fourth, having that be your opening night screening?
Well, we always try to open something with obviously something that we really like, mm-hmm. But also someone a film that we can bring a guest in for. We usually try to have a star of the movie. I mean, last year we had Aubrey Plaza and Kate Micucci for The Little Hours.
Right.
We've had Craig Robinson here for Morris from America. David Wayne for They Came Together, the director. Mm-hmm. He was here. So, you know, just, you know, guests can be tricky because, you know, there's schedules involved.
Sure, right.
So even if you want to open something one way, you have to wait. Like, well, they're not going to be available till later in the week, so we'll do it later in the week. So it just kind of organically comes together, mm-hmm. sometimes that Jordan and Gugu became available for opening night, and obviously one film is as good as the other in this festival. So that's what we're opening with.
Fantastic. And there is going to be a Q&A with both Gugu and Jordan, mm-hmm. Following the film. When it comes to moderating that Q&A, who's going to be up there?
Tasha Robinson.
Excellent.
Will be there doing that. She's participated in a number of Q&As at the festival over the years, and she's fantastic. So really looking – I mean, because our opening night, if you look at the films that we have, there is kind of a – certainly a theme – developing, mm-hmm. Fast Color, Support the Girls, Andrew Bajalski's latest film, and Revenge, which is our midnight film, mm-hmm. all starring women, all have a clearly a pro-woman theme to all of them. And again, something that just kind of came together and made sense, and something we wanted to do this year.
Well, especially in this day and age, mm-hmm. It's really important that we are supporting women in film.
Certainly.
And women in the arts in general. So I think that's a fantastic choice. Fantastic choice. I see that we're going to be having Woman of Tokyo by the legendary Yasujirō Ozu.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I feel like with foreign film, especially that classic of foreign film, it's starting to get a little bit lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, myself, I'm a self-proclaimed Criterion nut, mm-hmm. so I've collected as much.
Are you saying Woman of Tokyo is not available on Netflix? Is that what you're saying? Really? An Ozu film is not available on Netflix?
No way.
I'm shocked.
So this might be the first chance for a lot of people to see this type of old international film.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about selecting Woman of Tokyo?
Well, Woman of Tokyo is actually, we're co-presenting this film. This is actually part of the Music Boxes and co-presented by the Chicago Film Society. They do a kind of a silent film Saturday once a month,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of coincided with our festival this year, and so we basically co-hooked up
with them.
So if you have a pass for our festival, you can get into that for free. If you have a pass, it is included as part of our festival lineup. So if you have a full festival pass, you can get into that. Otherwise, it's a separate admission.
Yeah, and the going into a silent film, especially in the Music Box, in a place that's such a, I don't know, a monument, I feel like, to not just film of indie or international nature, but also big blockbuster films. I mean, I saw Dunkirk there in 70mm.
Please.
I think now seeing it seeing a silent film at the Music Box just feels like it's going to be an experience.
Well, plus on top of that, if you haven't experienced the Music Box with Dennis Scott on the organ,
right?
He's going to be doing live accompaniment with Woman of Tokyo. And Dennis is always there for opening night. So as we're settling in to get the fest all started up, he's there, you know, hammering away on the organ. It's just, I mean, it makes the entire evening just feel extra special. Just,
right.
Just, you know, it feels there's an old time feel to it. And again, the community aspect of it that just, it's just kind of, you know, warming.
When originally planning the festival, did you have any other venues in mind, or was it just, we have to go for the Music Box, this is what we need to do?
Well, the first weekend that we did was at the Movie Co. in Rosemont. Okay. And we knew one of the special events planners there at the Movie Co. And this was this – again, I pitched this idea to him because we were doing some – classic film Q&As there every once in a while, mm-hmm. and he was looking for other ideas, and I pitched him this nutty film festival idea, and that's how that developed. After it was a success that first weekend, and we had William Friedkin there to present Sorcerer, which was an mm-hmm. amazing evening, and we kind of knew after that weekend that we'd if we were going to do something bigger, if we were going to expand this thing and turn it into the week event that it's become since then, mm-hmm. We needed a venue in the city
right.
that encapsulated everything we wanted uh-huh. in this festival. And the Music Box is just the greatest film theater in the city.
Easy.
So that was the first place we approached, and they were open to the idea, and they've been our home ever since.
Well, and where else in the city of Chicago are you going to get a 25th anniversary 35 millimeter screening
yeah.
of the Stone Cold classic Jurassic Park on the Sunday on May 6th?
Yeah, something for the kids. Yeah, something for the kids. You know, I mean, we haven't had a lot of movies over the years that have been – that you could bring families to. You know,
right.
we're always on the lookout for that. But usually a lot of the things that families are going to go to are, you know, big Disney things,
sure.
animated things people are going to go see. So we haven't had an opportunity to have something. And this, you know, kind of came to us. This is this idea. And we asked Universal, I'm like, well, you know, this is a great idea. Can we play it on 35 millimeter? Can we play it on film? Which the Music Box loves to do.
Sure.
If they could get a film print in there and put that out. I know the projectionist of the Music Box wants us. You know, if we could play all these on 35 millimeter, he would be
yeah.
there every day to do it. So the opportunity to play what I hear is a really wonderful print of that movie on its 25th anniversary, which is, again,
just
you talk about time flying away. I mean, I
right.
still remember the first night that I saw that movie.
Wow.
And that's a movie, you know, Jurassic Park is for another generation the way Jaws was for, and Jaws and E.T. were for another generation. So Spielberg has put his stamp on multiple generations.
Right.
And for some it was Jaws, others it was E.T., for numbers Jurassic Park. There's a reason Jurassic World did as well as it did, because
oh, yeah.
you had all the people who were kids when they saw Jurassic Park are now dads, and they get to bring their kids to that. And so now we got a matinee of the original classic Jurassic Park in this festival, and we couldn't be happier to play it.
Yeah, it's I mean, Spielberg
yeah.
just
well, see, I know critics are not all snobby.
No.
We can have fun too.
You know. Well, I would definitely have to think twice about talking to someone who can't appreciate Jurassic Park for
in that
for
theater.
What it is. Absolutely,
in
I
that
mean,
theater is going to be incredible,
and I can't wait. There's such a special quality to watching something on film. I've been lucky enough through the Music Box, been able to see things. I got to see Vertigo on 35, and mm-hmm. or it might have even been 7. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But I was just so floored. I'm like, I'm watching this movie that was made decades ago.
Yeah.
Decades ago, and it looks pristine.
Mm-hmm.
The colors pop. So if you really want to, you know, experience Jurassic Park, that is going to be no time to do it.
Yeah, noon on Sunday the 6th.
I see we're also doing an appreciation of Mr. Paul Schrader.
Yeah, in the program this year, we always try to do an essay, some special guest or a film that we're going to be playing. And we're really fortunate this year to have a legend at the
Truly.
Festival. On Monday, May 7th, Paul Schrader is going to be here for a Q&A and to present his latest film, First Reformed, with Ethan Hawke and Amanda Seyfried. And I mean, the name Paul Schrader, if you just, you know, screenwriters don't always, they're not the first people you always think of.
Right.
But there are certainly a couple handful of screenwriters that you know their name, and Paul Schrader is one of them. Any film person worth their salt knows who Paul Schrader is. He wrote Taxi Driver. He's on the screenplay. He co-wrote screenplays for Raging Bull, Last Temptation of Christ, and that's just the Scorsese stuff
right.
he's involved with. He also directed Mishima, Life in Four Chapters, and Affliction, Autofocus. I mean, this guy has crafted some wonderful, challenging dramas over the years, and this latest one is going down as one of his best.
I mean, it is typically tortured when it comes to Paul Schrader. Mm-hmm. He really likes to have characters that are just in really pretty dark situations. If you haven't heard of First Reformed, just the quick blurb, a pastor of a small church in upstate New York is just spiraling out of control after his soul-shaking encounter with an unstable environmental activist and his pregnant wife. And it's just a chilling thriller. Mm-hmm. Tell us about talking to Paul Schrader's people and getting this to happen.
Well, I mean, First Reformed, one of the great things about, I mentioned people who are on board with the festival from day one. There was this little studio back in 2013 that was just getting started called A24. And that year they gave us The Spectacular Now.
Right.
And we played that as part of our closing night with Sorcerer. They've been on board since the beginning, and every year we've had one, at least one or sometimes up to three of their movies every year. Mm-hmm. So they're always one of the first people we go to, and we're always rooting for them to get something great at Sundance and the other festivals because
Absolutely.
They've been so great to work with over the years. And so First Reformed, the opportunity came that they were able to – Paul Schrader's kind of doing a tour and whatnot for the film. And we just kind of massaged all of our schedules to sort of figure out when he'd be able to come through Chicago. And Monday, May 7th is going to be the day. So he's going to be here presenting the movie. He's going to be in town talking with critics and for the next day doing interviews and things mm-hmm. like that. So that's going to be – that. I mean, that's one of these lifetime moments for people who are obsessed with film. That
sure.
To come and see a legend like Paul Schrader be there and – was promises to be a fascinating discussion with Peter Zabzinski, who wrote the essay, and Steve Procopi, who does a lot of our Q&As at the festival mm-hmm. as well. That conversation, I mean, the movie, people are, you know, certainly have a lot to talk about after the movie, but the conversation afterwards probably just as much.
Absolutely. Have you had a chance to see First Reformed?
This is actually one of the films, you know, the programming team, we see as many movies as we possibly can,
sure.
but sometimes these guys see these movies at Sundance. I see other movies. We're trying to, you know, again, see as much as we possibly can, and we can only be in so many places at once. So First Reform is one of the ones that this one actually goes back to Toronto last year, and it was immediately – so it's probably one of the very first movies we put on our radar. And originally it was supposed to open in April, so it didn't look like we were going to get it. And then A24 miraculously pushed it back that managed to, you know – fall right in line with our
sure.
festival. So First Reform is something that's been on our radar for a very long time. So I'm, you know, again, I've become a fan. You know, all of us, you know, have, you know, three or four movies that we haven't seen in the lineup, and, you know, some of us work the front and, you know, go see the movie.
Yeah, it'll be nice, as despite the fact that you've programmed this festival mm-hmm. and you know almost everything that's going to be going on
yeah.
at this festival, you'll still get a chance to be surprised.
Right, absolutely.
Just I want to hit home the point that we are talking about Paul Schrader. I mean, As most people who listen to this show, we're film fans. We know who this guy is. We know what he's done. Just from a critic mode, why should people want to come and see Paul Schrader talk?
Because he's got a fascinating voice. I mean, you heard those titles that I talked about, and maybe people, not everyone has seen like Affliction or Autofocus or even Mishima, which are, you know, films that he's directed, but everyone knows Taxi Driver. Everyone knows Raging Bull in some capacity or another, and this is a guy that writes very fascinating films about tortured people. And who among us hasn't been tortured in some respect?
Right.
You know, either spiritually or you know, just in our everyday lives. And so, I mean, I think that he has really wonderful things to say about faith and our place in, you know, where we are in our daily lives. And it's like, why not? Like, why wouldn't you take
yeah.
that opportunity? Even if you just want to go, I'm going to see the guy who created Taxi Driver. That's
worth an Instagram
that's right
post.
There. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Moving on to closing night. One of the films that I've been watching, you know, develop for a while is Eighth Grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be playing on Thursday, closing night, May 10th, directed by none other than, I'd say, millennial comedic wunderkind, Bo Burnham, who many people do know. And if you don't know him, you should know him, because he writes some of the smartest, most well-produced comedy that I've seen in a while. Whether or not it always makes you laugh, it'll always make you think. And he's got this new movie, Eighth Grade, about a 13-year-old girl just experiencing it all.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about 8th grade and getting Bo involved with this.
Yeah, well, this is another A24 film. So immediately I saw it at Sundance and really liked it. And like, yes, we're definitely going to invite that because it's absolutely a crowd pleaser. And it's for everybody. I mean, it's the story of a 13-year-old girl who's right in that really awkward middle phase where you're not a kid anymore, but you're not quite a teenager either. So you're just about to graduate 8th grade. You're not exactly very popular. You have a video blog that you, you know, try to develop friends on the internet with, but you're still kind of an outsider. You're not really picked on per se, but you're not really in any particular crowd.
You're an in-betweener.
You're absolutely an in-betweener. And her mom has left. I forget if she's divorced. I think she's passed away in the film. And her dad, played by Josh Hamilton, is trying to be as best he can the cool dad kind of thing, which can be even more awkward because you're in that phase where you're kind of separating yourself from your parents a little bit. So that doesn't make things all the more easier. And like I said, I mean, whether or not you've been tortured in your life and you want to come see Paul Schrader, we've all been 13.
Right.
And whether you're male, female, whatever, you know, whatever race, class you are, you've experienced something that goes on in this movie. You know, even if it's just for an hour or a day, you will come away from this movie going like, yeah, this movie gets it.
Yeah.
This movie really gets it. And Bo Burnham, like, immediately they, you know, said like, you know, you want to bring in Bo? I'm like, yes, we will bring in Bo.
Can he bring the piano?
Yeah. And I don't think even when, you know, we said yes to it, because we try to bring in as many filmmakers or, you know, guests that we possibly can. And, you know, they offered Bo would be available and said, like, yeah, absolutely. We'd love to invite Bo. I don't think even we appreciated just how big he is, honestly. I mean, we knew him from stuff, but, you know, he has, you know, 1.7 million Twitter followers, and I had people calling me before tickets went on sale at, you know, my office going, are tickets on sale yet? People just, like, calling me, like, you know, they'll be on sale tomorrow, just, you know, okay. And I suggest that if people want to come to the screening, they might want to buy their tickets now.
Yes. I mean, this is a guy that is instantly recognizable to a lot of people. I mean, and he does cover a fairly large swath of, you know, of just ages. Mm-hmm. I know that I remember when he first started getting a little bit popular, I was like, oh, wow, this guy's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. And then seeing his career go on and seeing how theatrical he gets and how, you know, even with his stage shows, feels cinematic. When you watch, I know he has a couple specials on Netflix and stuff like that, and you watch it and you're like, man, this guy should make a movie. Mm-hmm. And I know that he had a failed television show at some point on MTV. So I've always been waiting. He's appeared in a few movies here and there.
Yeah.
And
people may know from The Big Sick last year.
He's
the comedian that's always giving the Kamel's roommate, or not, it was his roommate, that the really bad comedian. He keeps giving them crap in the movie.
Yeah. I got to say, I had to hand it to him I was like, I love Bo Burnham, but God, screw this guy. He's just the worst kind of comedian. He's so mean to everybody. Yeah. But I'm really excited to see 8th grade. When it comes to the Q&A, dealing with a comedian that he is definitely not afraid to say things that really cut to the core of a lot of stuff. What do you think the Q&A is going to be like?
I hope just like that. I mean, I hope that, you know, I'm not a guy that wants to see someone go up there and just be controversial for the sake of being controversial.
Right.
But I like honesty. You know, and if honesty doesn't always flow with what everyone thinks should be the norm, I'm fine with that too. And we've had Bobcat Goldthwait at our festival a few times, and people, you know, might still think of Bobcat as that character that he was doing in the 1980s.
Right.
But in real life, he's, you know, he is just a wonderful, genuine presence to be around. I mean, just
absolutely
could have been nicer the both times we've had him at the festival. And, you know, he comes up on stage and he's, you know, he answers honestly. He answers very funny often a lot, but he, you know, there's almost a dryness to his humor, and sometimes it goes a little bit overboard, but in a great way. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just like, oh man, I didn't expect him to say that. I just want honesty, and I know the people who do our Q&As ask great questions. We've been lucky enough that the people who attend, our audience members who get a chance to ask questions as well, have been very on point over the years. They're not the people that you hear about on Twitter and stuff, and just like, oh, they came up and they asked, you know, if you'd read my screenplay mm-hmm. and stuff. They ask actually really smart questions. We've had that fortune, and, you know, it's probably the nature of Chicago and the Music Box, obviously, but that's the kind of thing we want to see. So, you know, if you want to come, and I know there are going to be a lot of people screaming when Bo gets brought up to the stage, both before the movie and afterwards, you know, come with your good questions. Though, come with your good questions, because that's what we want to see. We want to see a real interaction.
Yeah, I will say that whenever it comes to a Q&A, and I've been to a few in my time, and it's always a little bit nerve-wracking when you're sitting there just to be like, okay, where does this go? Mm-hmm. Because as you mentioned, you do get the people who are just like, can you read my screenplay?
Right.
And it's
don't get up there and ask what the budget of the movie was. Ask there, you know, you can ask advice, but you know, make sure that it's not just personal, that it's a little more wide-reaching. Like, what advice would you give, you know, this, what advice would you give to your 13-year-old self? You know, whatever it might be. Just, you know, come with a smart question.
Right. I mean, you're going to be surrounded by...
anyone's time.
Exactly. You're surrounded by some of the best critics, not just in Chicago, but in the country.
Yeah.
You know, maybe show a little bit of your chops. You know, you don't have to be Gene Siskel, Roger Ebert, what have you, but
right.
Be ready for a good question. Again, this is the 6th annual Chicago Critics Film Festival, going from May 4th to the 10th. It's over at the Music Box Theater. If you've never been or you forgot where it is, 3733 North Southport, one of the most legendary theaters in Chicago. Where are people going to be able to get tickets? Through the Music Box, through you guys?
Yeah, two places that you can go. You can go to our website, chicagocriticsfilmfestival.com, and you can see actually a whole history and archives about the festival. But we have links there. The full schedule is up there, and links to where you can buy the tickets and whatnot, and passes. Those links will take you to the Music Box Theater website. And if you go to the special events page there, and you'll see a direct link for us. Again, the full schedule is there, ticket availability. Passes for the tickets range from $10 to $18, depending on the screening. The festival pass that we've been consistent at all these years is $150.
Which is incredibly reasonable.
For the entire week. I mean, there are festivals that we're talking $650.
Absolutely.
Okay, and you can only see so many movies in a week. So you can't mm-hmm. see 150 movies at Sundance for $600 because time is an issue. Here you got 1 week. We don't play any movie against each other. So it's one theater. You can see every movie you want for $150. And if I could, I want to offer listeners of your show an opportunity to come to win some tickets to opening night. So if you email me at or email the fest at criticfest@gmail.com, just put the subject line Fast Color. The first 50 people who email me, you will win a ticket for opening night.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Not only can you go see a full week of expertly curated films at the Music Box Theater, the historic Music Box Theater, you can now win tickets to opening night. Go see Fast Color. First 50 people, you heard the email address. Eric Childress, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
He is the executive secretary of the board for the Chicago Film Critics Association. He's also a critic himself at efilmcritic.com. Where can people follow you on social media? Read a little bit of your criticism.
Yeah, you can go to on Twitter. I'm Eric the Movie Man. That's Eric with a K. If you go to efilmcritic, most of my stuff right now are in the podcast and radio form. Like I said, I'm on WGN Radio every week with Nick DiGilio. So we link everything there back to WGN Radio. So if people want to hear me there. And I also do a television show called Business First AM, where I talk about the box office every week. All the links are there and on Facebook. And again, Rotten Tomatoes, I do a box office column every weekend. So you can find me there as well.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Eric. We will see you over there at the festival. Connor and I will also be at the festival covering a few of the movies. So please, if you're there, come say hi. Let's talk film. Let's talk film festivals. You are listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN+. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush, and we will see you all next week.